turn to Psalm 107. Psalm 107. This particular psalm is without any inscription or title. Its author is unknown. The occasion on which it was written is not specified, though it is very probable that it was written upon the return from Babylonian captivity. The subject of the psalm is the redemption and deliverance of a people by God. We see that in verses 2 and 3, "Let the redeemed of the Lord say so, whom he hath redeemed from the hand of the enemy, and gathered them out of the lands from the east and from the west, from the north and from the south." But this theme of redemption, this theme of deliverance is repeated throughout the psalm. The design of the psalm is to invoke thanksgiving and praise, to invoke the thanksgiving and praise of the redeemed. We'd like to read verses 6 and verse 8. Verse 6, "Then they cried unto the Lord in their trouble, and he delivered them out of their distresses." Verse 8, "Oh, that men would praise the Lord for his goodness and for his wonderful works to the children of men." Now, we will be gleaning from the entire psalm, but the central thought of the message will come from parts of these two verses that we've just read. In verse 6, we want to notice their trouble and their distresses. Verse 6 is repeated in verse 13, verse 19, and verse 28. So we have this four times in the psalm. In verse 8, we read of his wonderful or his marvelous, incredible, magnificent, awesome, glorious works to the children of men. And this is repeated verbatim in verse 15, verse 21, and verse 31. So we have these two thoughts repeated in the psalm four times. Putting these two thoughts together, we have the trouble and distresses of life, verse 6, and then in all the places it's repeated. And we have a wonder-working God, verse 8, and then again the places that that is repeated. So we're going to speak this morning on a wonder-working God for the trouble and distresses of life. Now this 107th psalm is, the structure of the psalm is easily seen. There is the introduction, which we see in verses 1 through 3. There is, and the introduction is simply a call to praise because of the character and because of the work of the Lord. From there, verses 4 through 32, again, the psalms are songs. In verses 4 through 32, you have four stanzas. You have four verses of the psalm. And each stanza begins with the people's plight. You see verse 4 and 5, you have the people's plight. You see stanza 2, verses 10 through 12, you have the people's plight. Stanza 3, verses 17 through 18, again begins with the people's plight. Verses 23 through 27, you have the fourth stanza, and again it begins with the people's plight. This is followed by the people's cry to the Lord, and the deliverance that God provided. This is followed by the specifics of the deliverance. And this is the same in each stanza. So it's a psalm that is very easily outlined. It's a psalm that you can very easily see a distinct order. And then, of course, this is followed by a call to praise. And then it's followed by the people's new situation. That is the situation that God brought them to by bringing them out of their troubles and their distresses. These four stanzas are followed with a concluding section, verses 33 through 43, which are simply a summation, a recap of the psalm, which serves, of course, for further reason to praise the Lord. This 107th psalm is one of encouragement. It is a reminder of what the Lord can do. It is a reminder of the difference that the Lord can make in lives. It is a revelation of the fact that the Lord is the answer. It is a revelation of the fact that the Lord is the hope of all mankind. And every time we assemble, there are a variety of needs that we, of course, cannot address specifically. But all you need to know is that the Lord is the answer to all your needs. And He is the hope of everyone here. That's always so. Every time we assemble, that is true. So let's consider, first of all, the trouble and the distresses that people may find themselves in. Again, in verse 6, verse 13, verse 19, verse 28. We read the word trouble. Their trouble. Trouble conveys the idea of problems. It conveys the idea of difficulties. Perhaps inconveniences. Some sort of trial. Some sort of tribulation. So you have the word trouble. You also have the word distresses, which, may I say, is different from trouble. It is the result of. It is what we feel in the trouble. Distresses conveys the idea of anguish, suffering, pain, torment, misery, sorrow, and woe. Trouble, distresses. Notice also that these are of a personal nature. It says their trouble, their distresses. It does not just say troubles and distresses, but it says their trouble, their distresses. So trouble and distresses are of a personal nature. We all know that. Notice also that they are of an encompassing nature. It reads, in their trouble. And it reads, out of their distresses. It speaks of the encompassing nature of trouble and distresses. The specifics of their trouble, the specifics of their distresses are seen throughout the psalm. And they are indicative of the fact that trouble and distresses, they are indicative of the trouble and distresses that people find themselves in today. The specifics of these illustrate the conditions and the situations that people can find themselves in. In verse 4, we have the condition and situation of wandering. It says they wandered in the wilderness in a solitary way. They found no city to dwell in. That's their trouble. Here's their distress, hungry and thirsty. Their soul fainted in them. But they wandered. It simply means to move about aimlessly, to drift, to stray. That's what the whole world is doing. A condition and situation of movement, but getting nowhere beneficial. The wandering, notice, was in the wilderness. A very unsettled place. It is in a solitary place, a very desolate, a very gloomy and vacant way of life. Notice also the condition and situation, verse 4. They found no water, or they found no city to dwell in. That is, the condition and situation is one of fruitless search. Here they are wandering in endless circles. They have nothing to show for it. They found no city to dwell in. A condition and situation of continual disappointment. They are looking for a city. They are looking for a place wherein they can dwell. And they find none. Notice verse 5, hungry and thirsty. Their soul fainted in them. So it is a condition and a situation of utter exhaustion. So what we read in verses 4 and 5 is futile and exhausting effort in trying to find where the answer lies and where satisfaction is found. And that is the world today. That may be some sitting here right now. You wander and wander looking for that which you can find an answer. A place where you can find satisfaction. But you look and you look and you look. But they found no place. That is the condition and situation of many. You'll notice in verse 10 that the condition and situation is one of being settled in darkness and fear. In verse 10, we read, such has sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, being bound in affliction and iron. Now notice here, this is a different stanza, but notice these people are not wandering. They have ceased from wrongdoing. Their condition is actually worse. They sit. That is, they are firmly settled. Where is it that they sit? They sit in darkness, which throughout the Bible, of course, is a picture of ignorance and sorrow and misery. And they sit in the shadow of death, which would speak of their distress. It speaks of dread. It speaks of fear. It speaks of gloom. But notice also in verse 10, the condition and situation of being a prisoner. They not only sit in darkness, but we see that they are bound. That is, they are restrained in affliction and iron. So here is a people firmly settled in darkness. Over them is a cloud of dread and gloom. They are filled with fear, and they are restrained by iron. As they sit in that darkness, they are restrained in iron. So the picture is this. It is a condition, it is a situation of trapped with no way out. If you were just sitting in darkness, you could perhaps get up and leave the darkness. But this is far more serious. They don't just sit there, they're bound there. They can't get up. They're restrained in this place. This is the condition of all lost sinners. But it is the condition and situation of many. They are trapped. And there does not appear to be a way out. Here's the distress of the situation. There is hopelessness. There is a sense of hopelessness. Most of the world lives there. They sit in darkness, and they are restrained by iron. Notice verse 11, the condition and situation is being a rebel and a neglecter of God. Verse 11 says, here's why they sit in darkness. Here's why they're bound in affliction and iron. Because they rebelled. Because they rebelled against the words of God. That is why people sit in darkness. Because they rebel against what God says. That is why they are held in iron. They rebel against the words of God. And then it says, and condemned. That is, they treat with no regard the counsel or the advice of the Most High. They think lightly of the counsel of God. We see also in verse 12 the condition and situation of being downcast and helpless, which again would speak more of their distress, what they feel because of the trouble. Therefore, he brought down their heart with labor. They fell down, and there was none to help. So what we see in verses 10 through 12 are people held by something, restrained by something. And they are as men put in chains of iron. They are held prisoner, perhaps by certain habits, How much of society is held prisoner by their own sinful habits? They are held prisoner by perhaps their ideas. You notice it all the time in a political cycle such as we're in now. What is being presented many times is simply ideas that will ensnare you, that will entrap, that will keep people enslaved. People are held prisoner by certain ideas, by certain thoughts. You can have a state of mind that holds you prisoner. You can be a prisoner to your own state of mind. You can be a prisoner to your own attitudes. And these things hold as with an iron grip. And we read here that the cause is rebellion against God. That's the cause. The cause is neglect of God. And as these people are restrained, they rebel more and more against God. They neglect more and more the counsel of God. And what happens? The iron just gets tighter and tighter and tighter. And the situation becomes more and more hopeless. And people become more and more miserable. And more helpless. And this is the condition. This is the situation that many find themselves in. Verses 17 and 18, we see the condition and situation of being controlled by the foolishness. By foolishness. Verse 17 says, "Fools because of their transgressions, and fools because of their iniquities, are afflicted. Their soul abhorreth all manner of meat." That is, they don't want meat. They don't want nourishment. They don't want what will truly make them better. They hate that. They are drawn to that which only strengthens the iron grip, and they abhor the answer to their problems. And they draw near unto the gates of death. Fools because of their transgressions. So foolishness is the root. Because of their foolishness, they transgress. By that, what we mean is they simply go beyond the laws and counsels of God. And have iniquities. That is, that which is twisted and perverted and is not going to help them one iota. As a result of this, verse 18, their soul abhorreth all manner of meat, and they draw near unto the gates of death. This speaks of a condition and a situation of spiritual disease. And the disease is not getting better. The disease is getting worse and worse and worse, and they're getting closer and closer and closer to death. And this is the truth. This is the condition and situation of many. We see the condition and situation of being tossed to and fro. We see it there in verses 23 and verse 27 through 27. We read in verse 26 that it's picturing people out on the sea. They mount up to heaven. They go up, but then it says they go down to the depths. And that's their life. Eventually, they're more this than this, but they're just constant. That's the condition and situations of many. And it goes on to say in verse 27, they reel to and fro and stagger like a drunken man. That is, they're being controlled. These men on the ship were being controlled by the storm. They were being controlled by their circumstances. Which, of course, results in further chaos and constantly going down into the depths. They reel to and fro like a drunken man. That's a condition and situation of lost balance. They have no balance. Everything's out of kilter. That's pretty much describes our society. Everything's out of whack. Everything's out of kilter. And every solution of man makes it more so. Notice verse 27. The last part of that says, and are at their wits' end. That pretty much describes the world today. They are at their wits' end. That is a condition and a situation of they have tried everything. They have tried all their ability and all their resources. And things just get worse and worse. Some fool this past week said concerning the gun violence, terrorism, God isn't fixing this, so we have to. That's unbelievable. That's an unbelievable statement. First of all, if God isn't fixing it, you're not going to.
That's right.
I don't want to get off on that. But being at your wits' end is a place of no escape. It's a place of no help and no deliverance in sight. So these are the conditions. These are the situations that many find themselves in. But again, there's another thought here. We see in the midst of all of this, there is a wonder-working God. And that changes everything. All through the psalm, we have a people and we have God. All through the psalm, we have conditions and we have situations and we have God. And that is true here today. There are people and there is God. There are conditions and there are situations. But there is God. But throughout the psalm, God is prominent. The word Lord, if I counted right in all of this, the word Lord occurs 12 times in this 78th Psalm. The word God occurs one time. The word Most High occurs one time. He, referring to God or Lord, occurs 21 times. And the word His, referring to God or Lord, 12 times. That is a total of 47 mentions of God. So throughout the psalm, we see who and what God is. We see that He is Lord. Again, all 12 times, it occurs in all capital letters. It is Jehovah, the eternal, self-existent one. When we speak of Lord, we're not speaking of Allah. We are speaking of the eternal and self-existent one, the one and only God. In verse 1, it is declared that He is good. That has to do with His perfection. It speaks of the fact that He is superior, that He is righteous, that He is correct, that He is suitable, that He is faithful, that He is kind. In addition to His goodness, verse 1, we read that His mercy endureth forever. That speaks of His love and His kindness. In fact, in verse 43, we read of the loving kindness of the Lord, which of course speaks of His gentleness, His concern, His care, His helpfulness. In verse 11, He is referred to as the Most High, speaking of His overwhelming majesty and sovereign rule. So in this 107th Psalm, God is the resource of man in the midst of their condition, in the midst of their situations. Four times we read, then they cried unto the Lord in their trouble, while they were in their trouble. They cried unto the Lord. So we see God is the resource. There are troubles, there are distresses, but there is God, and He is our resource. All through the psalm, we see the power, we see the goodness, we see the mercy. We see the loving kindness of God on display. All of this is displayed in verse 2, the redeemed of the Lord, whom He hath redeemed. Whom He hath redeemed. That is, He's the source of redemption. He's the originator. He's the producer. Society needs to realize that. God is the producer. He's the reason for the redemption. The fact of redemption and the entire psalm is a reminder of the change and difference that God can make. In verse 6, He delivered them out of their distresses. In verse 13, He saved them out of their distresses. In verse 19, He saveth continually them out of their distresses. In verse 28, He bringeth them out of their distresses. Who is it that does this? It's He. It's God. He's the producer. Now notice in verse 7, God led them to the very thing that they could not find. In verse 4 it says, they found no city to dwell in. And He led them forth by the right way. This world had better wake up to the right way, that they might go to a city of habitation. The only way you can get there is the right way. Problem with the world is they want to get there, but they're going the wrong way. They're going down a road that does not lead to that city. But who was it that led them to what they could not find of their own? It was God. And you may be here today, and you may be looking for a place where you can dwell and be satisfied and find rest. God is the one that can lead you to to what you will never find on your own. In verse 9, God satisfied and filled them with what they needed. Notice verse 9, for He satisfieth. Who satisfies? The government? No, not on your life. For He satisfieth the longing soul. He does. And filleth the hungry soul with goodness. It is God that satisfies. It is God that fills. Again, this past week, some fool mocked people for praying. It's God that satisfies and fills. You'd better pray. Verse 14, God rescued them from the gloom and dread and fear. He brought them out of darkness. Remember, they sat in the darkness. He brought them out. And if you sit in darkness today, He can still bring you out. And the shadow of death. Notice also, He broke the bondage and break their bands in sunder. Verse 16 says, for He hath broken the gates of brass and cut the bars of iron in sunder. God still does that. God is still able. God is the resource. We notice also verse 20 that God healed their disease. He sent His word and healed them and delivered them from their destructions. Verse 29, He calmed the storm. And in verse 30, He brings gladness in giving refuge. And then the summary in verses 33 through 38. We see that it is God that brings about miraculous change. And He does so with ease. It says, He turneth rivers into a wilderness. God can take that which is beneficial and make it unbeneficial. He turneth rivers into wilderness, and the water springs into dry ground. He did this for His people, by the way, to give them victory. A fruitful land into barrenness. God can do that. God does that for the wickedness of them that dwell therein. Man can get all proud of what they think they've accomplished. And God can take all their so-called accomplishments and turn it into utter disaster. He turneth the wilderness into standing water. Now we see the reverse. God can turn a wilderness into standing water and dry grounds into water springs. And there He maketh the hungry to dwell, that they may prepare a city for habitation, and sow fields and plant vineyards, which may yield fruits of increase. Verse 38, He blesseth them also. God is a God that brings about miraculous change. And Psalm 107 is simply a reminder that He is a God who can. And He still is. He still is. Though most of the world is oblivious to God, has no interest in God, He is a God who can. The 107th Psalm is a reminder that God can in the midst of impossibilities. Regardless of your condition, regardless of your situation, God knows how. And God can. The 107th Psalm is a testimony that God can when no one else can. God can. It is a testimony that there is no need in this earth that is beyond our God. It is testimony that there is nothing too big for God. Nothing so mighty that He can't conquer it. It is a testimony that in the midst of that which is pressing, that which seems desperate, in the midst of chaos, in the midst of failure, in the midst of defeat, in the midst of discouragement, misery, and distress, in the midst of all the problems, in the midst of all the needs, there is a God who reigns supreme. There is a God who excels all. And He is present. And He is near. And throughout life, we will find ourselves in a variety of conditions. We will find ourselves in a variety of situations. But there is a God who will hold the hand of His people. There is a God who will carry His people. There is a God who will shepherd His people. There is a God who still has still waters for His people. There is a God who can still restore souls and lead in right paths and walk with you through the valley of the shadow of death. There is a God who can still comfort. There is a God who can still spread a table before you in the midst of your enemies. There is a God who still anoints, causing cups to run over. He is a God who can make a difference. He is a God who does make a difference. Four times we read, then they cried unto the Lord in their trouble. People in the grip of horrible things here in the 107th Psalm. People engulfed with difficulties and tribulation. People overwhelmed with sorrows and woe. And it says they cried unto the Lord in their trouble. And He delivered them out of their distresses. I think of Nehemiah chapter 1 and Nehemiah chapter 2. In Nehemiah chapter 1, Nehemiah gets word of the condition of Jerusalem. And it says, and he prayed. In Nehemiah chapter 2, he's trying to figure out what he could say to the king in order to get leave. And what does it say? So I prayed. So I prayed. We have a mighty God, an almighty God. We need to cry unto Him. We need to cry unto Him. We need to cry unto Him right now. For He is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think. Ephesians 3 verse 20. Oh, how we need to cry unto God. There isn't anyone here that does not need a miracle of some sort in their life. We need to cry unto the One who can work the miracle. There's no need to go anywhere else. He is the answer. He is the answer. Cry unto the Lord. Husbands and wives that cannot get along, you need to fall on your faces together before God and cry unto God. Quit trying to fix one another. Cry unto the Lord. As we look at our own lives, we see much that is wrong. Cry unto God. As we look at the lives of others, and we need to stop trying to fix others. Cry unto the one who can. Cry unto the Lord. So yes, there are troubles. There are distresses. But there is a God. Don't lose sight of God. And He is a God who does wonderful works to the children of men. Aren't you glad today that in the midst of all the trouble, in the midst of all the distresses, there is a wonder-working God? And that is our hope today. You mean to tell me you're going to pin your hope on God? I'm every bit of it. That's all we have. It's the wisest thing to do. Put everything on Him. What a blessing. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.